Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Deep left into the bleachers, a two-run homer.
A swing and a miss, ball game.
Liftoff.
And history marches on, 22 consecutive wins.
From the sports desk of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com, this is Leading Off with Ryan Lewis, a podcast on the Cleveland Indians.
Santana makes the catch! Ball game! The Indians have won the American League pennant!
The Cleveland Indians are going to the World Series!
Now, Ryan Lewis and Dan Kadar.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Dan Kadar of Ohio.com. Of course, Ryan is joining me. Ryan, how's it going?
It's going great. Let's rage.
Let us rage. The Indians are currently in the midst of a road series against the Toronto Blue Jays. They're about to get going here a little bit after we finish recording on a Tuesday. Then, of course, they got the road series in Kansas City. So the sustainable part of the schedule for the Indians in July continues before they really hit the wood chipper. Then they got Houston, the Angels, the Rangers, and then it gets tough in August with the Twins, Red Sox, and Yankees. But we'll get all to all of that on another edition of Leading Off, Ryan. But that's setting the stage of this first topic we're going to talk about. In July, the Indians, of course, are white hot. They're 13-3 over that span. That is not a pace that any team anywhere can probably keep up with. But can the Indians conceivably continue riding this momentum, or are they just playing terrible opponents right now?
It's probably, you know, that answer is probably somewhere in the middle, of either end of that spectrum. Unquestionably, you know, the lineup has had more length than it has for the first several months. A couple of guys in the outfield, Mercado, has just been really good after a slump that he really struggled with. The Indians have continued to get some contributions from some guys lower in the lineup. Tyler Naquin has seemingly found his swing for a short period of time. All of those things are going to help. And Jose Ramirez playing like, you know, circa 2017-18 Jose Ramirez is a huge boost to this offense. So those are all positive signs. And meanwhile, the starting rotation has at least held its own as it, you know, continues to get closer to full health. Corey Kluber is now throwing bullpen sessions. Carlos Carrasco has also thrown a few. His situation is much more delicate, a little bit, even more unclear than Kluber's in terms of the timeline. But, if the lineup can continue to produce at the level that it has, yes. I mean, they could sustain at least a positive trend. Not quite what they've been doing, of course. Their schedule does kind of play into it. That was one of the key factors as to why a lot of people thought that the Indians would be in the postseason this year, is that the American League Central is not a murderer's row right now. And, you know, the Indians in the second half of the season have had and will have a very high number of games that they should be favored to win just about every night. And for a large portion of this season, the Indians were not taking care of business against, against those teams, against the White Sox, the Royals, and the Tigers. And, you know, that was one of the reasons why there was so much concern around this roster. That script has flipped kind of starting around the beginning or the middle of June. And since that point, the Indians have kind of been rolling. And yes, they've chopped off a huge amount of space between themselves and the Twins. That being said, the Twins had a much harder schedule the last couple of weeks than the Indians, and those two things are about to flip in August. So yes, the Indians have put themselves in a position to either be buyers or at least not be sellers. As we've talked about, as I wrote last week, those two labels don't necessarily have to be 100% or 0%. There is some middle ground where the Indians can make a huge trade, a significant alteration to the roster, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're buying or selling. It's just a continuation of the goals that they've had. And with there being so many of them, it's a difficult balance to find between trying to contend today, trying to reallocate some things around the roster, help the lineup, while also kind of moving their chess pieces in a way that they're still thinking about 2019, but they're also thinking about 2020 and 2021 and 2022, and doing that all at once. With a clear mandate to cut some payroll, that's a really difficult task before Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff. And they've done what they can so far. There weren't very many moves in the winter, sort of to align some possibilities for July. And so here we are. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. And they've put themselves in the right position. Whether or not that continues in August will be really interesting to see. But if the Indians can kind of stay where they are entering September, considering their schedule and the Twins' schedule, that would be a huge, a huge pass, in terms of a month that could be a trying month. But if the Indians can get it into September, that would be a huge win for them, just maintaining their spot right now.
Right, because, the Indians have 10 games left this season against the Twins. Six of them are in September, three on the road, three at home. So, it's going to be fascinating to watch how the Indians close out the month, obviously, but how they manage that middle part of the month, like I said, where they play at Minnesota, then Boston, then at New York, in a three-series span there. That's about as tough as you can ask for, really, but Ryan, I have some interesting, to me at least, stats that the Indians have compiled over this stretch here in July. Would you like to hear them?
Let's do it.
Okay. Of course, I'm missing a ton. I just picked out some of my favorites here. You mentioned Tyler Naquin. I did not realize this, but in July, he is hitting .396. That's, .004 below .400 for the month. That is incredible.
And that's actually gone down the last 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
It was like .447 at one point, just unheard of, like unconsciously hot for a while.
Now, here's the next one. Jose Ramirez is hitting .328 in July. I have an interesting addition to that real quick, but let me ask you this first about Jose Ramirez. Can we officially say he is out of this damn slump?
To an extent, it's really hard to say with baseball, because baseball is the sport where you're going to have ebbs and flows throughout the season. Tito, one of his mantras is that he hates the term turning the corner.
Mm.
Because just because you've kind of gotten over something doesn't mean that, A, it's going to come back, or B, something else won't pop up. That being said, it looks like as low as Jose Ramirez went, there's no guarantee that he's going to stay where he is, but it does look like that slump that he was in has, to an extent, passed. So maybe we can, I'm not sure that we can raise his ceiling, but we can, fans can probably expect to raise his floor in terms of his production, because he has, improved to a great degree. So maybe just you can kind of X out his worst, while maybe not also expecting his best, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And if anybody missed last night's Indians game on TV, I found this part fascinating about Jose Ramirez, and then it turned out to be most of the offense. They're all using these Rajai Davis bats. It's fascinating. Andre Knott did a really nice job on the TV broadcast detailing this, and Andre in general is phenomenal on television. I love watching him, even though he has a feud with Mustard going on. But he just had this great factoid about everybody started using these Rajai Davis model bats, and now everybody except like Lindor and Roberto Perez and one other guy are using these bats. It was a great little factoid to eat up an inning. But there is this interesting stat I want to bring up with Ramirez. Maybe it doesn't matter because he's being productive, but in this month where he's hitting .328, his on-base percentage is .329. He's walked literally one time all month. It's better.
Yeah. With the walk.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of what I was with you before is that, you know, it's rare that a guy can completely just turn it around and never look back, and also within a hot streak, there are often also some disconcerting signs, or at least something that doesn't point to how everything is going well. So he, you know, the Indians have talked about how he hasn't been able to keep balls fair for so long, and now he has, where he's had all these hard hit balls, but a lot of them were just going foul. And if he, you know, if fair territory was counted 30 or 40 feet, you know, to his right of first base, he'd be hitting like .390. Mm. It's something where not everything always clicks at once. That's a pretty interesting stat. But yeah, he's hitting better. Is he going to continue it like this? Who knows? Will he ever fall into a slump like he did for the last like 7 or 8 months of baseball, going back to last August? Who knows about that either? But yeah, that's interesting. His eye isn't quite improved, but the bat is. So I guess the Indians will take what they can get right now.
Mm-hmm. And the other one I wanted to bring up, just because it lets me pat myself on the back. If anybody recalls, before the season, Ryan and I made predictions, and mine was Mike Clevenger would win the Cy Young Award. And unfortunately, the injury that he had has made that impossible. But in July, he has really been locked down, I think. He's 3-1 this month. His ERA is 1.88, and he has 34 strikeouts in 24 innings. He has really, to me, kind of helped solidify the starting rotation while, you know, the Indians still wait, like you mentioned, with Kluber and Carrasco. And while Bauer has kind of, while pitching a ton of innings still, not been great. He's just been okay. And while the other guys kind of fluctuate up and down, Clevenger, to me, has been the guy this month that has really spearheaded the starting rotation.
Does your arm hurt from all the patting on the back?
Well, I separated my shoulder, but we'll get through.
I imagine. My pick of I picked Bauer actually to win the Cy Young. It looked great for two starts. He gave up one hit.
Right.
Since that point, it's probably not going to happen. But yeah, that's the other thing that we don't really need to get into too much this week. I think we're going to have a huge trade deadline podcast next week. But
yes,
you know, those are two huge variables with Kluber and Carrasco, and that if you expect them back at least just by October, you can go into a series with Kluber, Carrasco, Clevenger, and Bieber, the all-star Bieber, before ever getting to Bauer. So in terms of a trade shift, it's, and how you want to position your pieces for October, that's another interesting factor and two huge variables there that the Indians will kind of have to figure out pretty quickly.
Hmm. Now, this podcast this week is a little shorter, but Ryan, I want to leave on this. Well, we have two things, actually. I skipped past one. We'll do the Indians playing on YouTube last, which are doing tonight. Of course, people will probably hear this after the game, but the latest in our ongoing series of baseball teams need to extend the netting at stadiums. Unfortunately, Francisco Lindor, a ball he hit a three-year-old. According to reports, the child is doing fine and has been released from the hospital. So that is good, but, you know, obviously during the game, Lindor looked pretty shaken after it happened. Then he kind of, you know, got back to work there, but it's just another example of why this needs to happen. Lindor was pretty outspoken after the game, Ryan. The White Sox have, you know, extended theirs in a very quick period. Just another example, though, that this needs to be a thing that baseball does. You went on a, I don't want to call it a Twitter rant about it, but you had some very good
consciousness.
Yeah, you had some very good points, and you mentioned some stuff in your walk-off thoughts after that game about it. What was the reaction you were getting, though? Was it agreeable, disagreeable, 50-50? What was it like?
I think the majority of the responses are in support of netting. I just don't understand how you can see something like that happen and still have this, I'm trying to pick the right word. I don't know about if bravado is the right word, but a lot of tough guy Twitter folks in our responses saying, well, if you can't get out of the way, don't sit there, or I've never been hit by a ball and I'm fine. And a three-year-old kid, you know, it. And the harrowing part of it was, it was difficult to tell exactly what happened while watching it live from the press box. So we see the ball go into the crowd, and it looked like someone may have been hit. You don't know where it hit them. You know, just from kind of not seeing the ball go anywhere. All we saw were the kid's parents scoop him up and just sprint up the steps.
Eek.
And that's all we knew for a while. That's all we heard for a while. Really, until we talked to Lindor, for the most part, that's all we knew, is that they scooped him up and sprinted to the paramedics. And that's just terrifying. And it's gut-wrenching every time. It's awful. The players hate these situations. Almora Jr. for the Cubs, in tears on the field, hugging an umpire in Houston because he hit a little kid. Completely shaken up about it. Lindor said that he needed to take a couple minutes. He said a prayer for the kid real quick before stepping into the box and kind of trying to refocus. For a column a couple weeks ago, Jake Bowers said the same thing, that a lot of players want it. Jake Bowers mentioned Comerica Park in Detroit because they've got the extended inning a little bit past the dugouts, and he loved it because there were a few balls in that series about a month or so ago that he said, hey, if someone's not paying attention, or even if they are, you shouldn't have to have a D1 scholarship just to sit along either foul line. And I just think a lot of the arguments against netting are invalid, and they don't carry a lot of weight, and there's holes in every single one of them. And the worst one, I think, is to say, oh, well, if you put netting up, it's gonna cost attendance. You're going to lose attendance. And I don't see how making the game less inclusive for anyone who wants to sit close to the field, whether you have kids or you just don't have player-level reflexes, and if you don't have a glove and blah, 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 that you just can't sit there, instead of just having someone look through a net. Nets are see-through. They're not that hard to look through. The most expensive seat in the ballpark, behind home plate, behind netting. And I'm willing to bet that if someone was in the right field corner and someone said, hey, we'll move you to behind home plate for free, most people are going to say yes. They're not going to say no because it's behind the net. So I don't know how many times this kind of has to happen. That's the part that kind of bothers me, is there's a worry that something truly horrendous is going to have to happen before they make this announcement. And that's not what you want to do. The NHL put up netting behind each goal, and that happened after a fan died. And you don't want to wait until it happens. There have already been a couple of kids hit. Thankfully, the Indians just released a statement that the three-year-old boy is doing well. He's been released from the hospital. So thank goodness for that. I just don't think there are any counter-arguments or negatives that outweigh the pros of putting up netting. And I hope that this is something that is league-wide starting in 2019. And I'm glad that everyone's been safe thus far in terms of some incidents this season. And hopefully there are some changes on the way. I just don't think that you can avoid it anymore. Balls are hit too hard. There's too much going on. It does not matter if people are on their cell phone or they're not. It doesn't matter if they have kids, or it shouldn't matter if they have kids in terms of where they sit. So hopefully starting 2019, some changes are made, and we can kind of have some progress there in terms of fan safety, because it should be the number one thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree completely. Of course, if anybody's listened to our podcasts here, we are pretty much in lockstep on this issue, so we'll see, but the speed in which the White Sox were able to do it should be an indicator for every other team in baseball that it's not that big of a deal to get done. Last thing.
Sorry, I do hope that people listen to that. I'm not arguing with Dan. He's kind of arguing with some people on Twitter that still have kind of this, it's never happened to me, so why does it matter, attitude. And I don't see how you can kind of see things happen several times now and kind of just ignore that. So, yeah, Dan agrees. I'm not arguing with Dan.
Yeah, we argue about plenty of other things.
Yes, like gravy. much right. more important stuff.
But right.
Not this. Yeah, this we're in lockstep, like you said.
Well, maybe this is something we can argue a little bit about to close out the podcast, or we'll agree. Who knows? The Indians game, like I mentioned, tonight against the Blue Jays is broadcasting only on YouTube. Now, Ryan, I know you cover every home game and stuff like that, and you go on the road a little bit, but I'm watching every game basically on television. So tonight's game is on YouTube only, and it's fascinating to me at a time when people are cutting the cord probably at a faster rate than ever in recent memory. And at a time when, like, on the Indians television broadcasts, Matt Underwood is, you know, having to read this thing about how Sling and Dish are going to drop Indians games unless you tell them they need to keep them, that classic stupid television thing about, you know, places threatening your programming. But tonight's game is on YouTube. That's basically all I know about it. But what is your take on a game being available only on television, you know, on your television device, whatever you want, via YouTube? Of course, you can listen to the great guys on radio if you want, but to actually view the game, you have to watch it on YouTube. What is your take on that?
Well, it's interesting timing. Personally, my wife and I are considering cutting the cord. And we've looked at some options. We were actually kind of looking at Sling, and then, you know, just like you, I was talking with Al Pelosi about the dangers of kind of what happens if Sling and DirecTV drop Fox Sports, and there's YouTube TV, which is another one. I know someone who just went to Hulu TV. That is the trend, and you know, a lot of people are doing it. In terms of the broadcast, I think it's everybody wants a piece of the action. Everyone wants a piece of the pie. Everyone wants to draw viewers in. A lot of people are going this route, because cable has become a little more expensive than some other options. And, you know, everyone's just trying to find ways to bring in new customers, trying to show people that, like, hey, it's pretty good on this side of the fence. I'm not really sure. I don't, you know, a lot of the ways that Major League Baseball and the NFL have tried to kind of expand the game in different ways, find new ways to present the game, I think it's all fine. And, you know, someone... I think it was the Blue Jays broadcast a couple weeks ago. Someone got his first career hit, and the line was, if he gets his first career hit, but 20 people saw it, does it count? I don't know. I just think it's a way to kind of get some more subscribers, a way to try to find new ways to, you know, bring in just as much of an audience as possible, which is fine. It's I guess their right to do it if they want to pay it for the broadcast. I above all, I hope that people who want to see the game have access to the game on as much of a regular basis as possible. So if this happened all the time, I'm not sure, because a lot of people don't want to figure out YouTube or don't know how to stream with their devices, or they don't have devices that can be streamed if you don't have an updated TV. So hopefully... I would be a huge fan if this was happening all the time in terms of blocking people out, but other than that, I'm not really sure. It's just it's business, and I guess it's going to happen. I don't have a concrete stance on it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, my feeling is that I don't want it to become the only avenue in which to watch a game. However, I love that it's an option, because, like, at 7 o'clock tonight, it's going to be 73 degrees and sunny outside. I don't necessarily want to be sitting in the house watching television.
Good point.
I want to go to the park after I eat dinner and go for a nice walk, maybe plop down afterward and watch the Indians game on my phone on YouTube. So from that aspect, I love it. From the aspect of, like I mentioned before we started recording, Rick Manning on the television broadcast shouting out old people having a birthday in Cuyahoga County. Those people aren't going to be watching on YouTube, most likely. And that kind of sucks. So I'm very for it. I love watching random NBA games on YouTube, you know, late at night, like a random Sacramento Kings game at 10 o'clock at night. But I certainly don't want it to be the only way in which people can take in viewing an Indians game. I'm fascinated by it, though. I think it's neat.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to pay some extra money to have the rights to a broadcast here and there, I get it. That's not necessarily anything like that new. It's new with the Indians, I guess, tonight, or well, Tuesday night if you're listening to this afterward. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not a huge fan of, not everybody has access to that, not everybody really knows how to use that. And so it's just, I'd rather be a little more, just have it a little more readily available if this is going to happen on a regular basis.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Ryan, anything else this week before we get out of here?
Nothing. We'll have a big trade deadline, all the stuff that's going on next week. And we don't have any ongoing bets. There was nothing to do there. So I think that's all for the agenda tonight.
Well, maybe we can come up with a nice bet if we can guess players we think the Indians could trade for correctly. If anybody missed last week's podcast, Ryan and I each picked out a guy. We'll bring that up again next week as we talk more about what the heck the Indians are going to do by the trade deadline and what should they do, that kind of talk. So we'll do more of that next week on Leading Off with Ryan Lewis. But for now, you're just going to have to follow Ryan on Twitter. He's at @ByRyanLewis. You can find all of our Indians coverage over at ohio.com/Indians. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we will talk to you next time.